I don't trust the polls because it has gotten it so wrong. What I see is very much a repeat of history. I see what was Nixon and what was Carter. And if I had to put my money on it, I would say that most likely you're going to have DeSantis be the quote unquote next Reagan. As much as I hate that.
I doubt it. I mean,
unless the Democrats and Biden, to me,
that's laughable.
Well, the idea of Trump being president was laughable to us too. And look what fucking happened.
Yeah.
People have to learn how to steel themselves for the worst case scenario. People didn't vote for the worst case scenario. People voted because, or didn't vote because they didn't think the worst case scenario was possible. I got you cornered on that one.
It is time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land
of speaking the truth and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
The problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience.
This is the beginning. It is not the finale. And that's why we're here. And that's why we rally.
We've got to be that creative minority. Creative minority. Find a way to get in the way.
I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Franklin, I know we've got to do something.
That's right. Hey, what's up?
Got to remember to put that down if I want to chat.
Oh, there you go. Yes, thank you. You use a headset, right?
I do.
And it always sounds good and consistent, you know? I love that.
You know, that's been one of the things, like, you know, I know that a lot of people enjoy having the microphone. Uh-huh. And I get it. I think it would probably sound a lot better if I had a microphone, like an actual dedicated microphone, but for me, like, especially being able to hear the headset, just, you know, having everything all in one and not having to remember to lean into the mic if I want to do something.
Right. No, you're always consistent. And that's my first piece of advice to all new podcasters. When they say, well, I need a mic, I say, well, you have a gamer headset. Just use that because it's always consistent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's your podcast advice. Welcome to Public Access America. My name is Jason and his name is Jeffrey, and we get together once a week to talk about the week. We're not live streaming, by the way. I just didn't feel like setting it up. So,
hey, whatever.
Cool. Yeah, no, I like that. And I wanted to start by saying I found in our podcast episodes that our podcast host, as wonderful and great as it is, put 8 commercials in every one of our episodes. And so I've eliminated those. I leave them at the end. If people, I don't care, then we make 10 cents. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important. I think people give up listening in the first 30 seconds if they don't like what they hear. And I don't like the ads that are being put in front of our episodes or in our episodes, just randomly halfway through during Winston Churchill's speech, there's an ad. I don't like that. That's not what this is about. Public Access America, our past episodes, our first 5 seasons, they're historical original audio. That's not monetizable. I don't monetize Malcolm X, you know, and James Baldwin. That's not what we're
right.
doing.
So that's,
I went back, I'm going back and removing them from old episodes and kind of cleaning out some of the weird episodes we have and all that stuff. But I'm going through it and I'm trying to curate it. And there's never going to be any ads stuck in the middle of our conversations unless it's a host ad. And we're not going to put the ads in the beginning anymore. As much as I love St. Jude's, I don't like their sob story at the beginning of my podcast. You know,
put it at the end or something. I don't know. Right.
Yeah. So we'll have 2 ads at the end. I mean, cause like I said, it's not like we're raking in the cash and it's not like that's what we're doing it for. So I hope other podcasters get that because I hate that. I turn so many new podcasts off just because there's ads at the beginning and I'm like, I don't want it, you know? So
my biggest problem with any type of advertisement is that I don't have confirmation that the person doing the advertising actually uses the product.
Right.
And so, like, you know, at least, like, you know, in some of the gun community, the stuff that I watch there, it's like, you know, when they're advertising products, it's because they've actually tested and used them and they actually recommend them.
Right.
You know, you get a bunch of people who put lines in, but like there's a few out there where they actually show themselves, you know, either, you know, sleeping on the mattress, you know, because they actually have it in their house, or, you know, they have the product on their gun, or, you know, they have it in their camping setup. And, you know, that's great. Like, if, you know, for me, it's one of those things, like, I wouldn't mind advertising if, you know, I got a chance to put my hands on the product, use the product, right. and then be able to sit down and say, yeah, I actually really like this. I would absolutely, you know, recommend people getting this and using it.
Right.
I just can't do that for most things personally. I just, I don't, you know, I did a little work in retail just long enough for me to realize that I can't sell shit that I don't, you know, I can't back up.
That's why I was a horrible, like, weed dealer. Cause I was always like, oh, you only have 30. Well, I really only spent 10, you know, I guess I'll take 20, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And my mom taught me at an early age, she wouldn't buy me like clothes with like a name brand on it. Like I remember wanting a jacket or a hat, and she's like, why would you advertise free for Coke? You know?
Right there. You know, and that's the thing is, like, you know, some of the name brand stuff out there, like, honestly, isn't that much better than whatever the store brand is. And then there's been a few cases where I've bought in store brand and I've been more impressed with the quality of the store brand than I have been with, you know, the quote unquote name brand.
Right. Yeah. Because it's built for people that need it to last sometimes, you know, so,
or, you know, or it's built for people who have a budget.
Mm-hmm. But I think the catalyst was, we were talking about Amazon and the union, you know, the unionization that's going on. And then I went back and there was an Amazon commercial at the beginning of our show. And I was like, that felt really gross and like counterproductive right at the start, you know?
Right, right.
Ugh, gross. So is there anything on your mind? Anything top of mind? It's been a weird, weird week that I only could like caption. I couldn't research. So,
you know, here it's been hot. Like, it has been almost 100 the entire week. I think today is supposed to be the last day where we're up in the 90s solid. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's just not fun. I don't enjoy that.
I did. Yeah. Cause I was outside and like Florida does this thing where it's hot as fuck, but it's so humid that it just rains. Like the sky can't hold the humidity and it just starts raining. It's not clouds. Mm. It's just water.
No, I've seen that a very few times in my life. And one of them was actually in Eastern Montana. I remember there was one time that it got super hot and in the middle of the day, I was watching it actually rain, but there were no clouds in the sky. And it was the weirdest thing ever. Cause I had never seen that before. So I actually had to look up the phenomenon because it's like, how do you explain it's raining, but there are no clouds.
Yeah.
And it basically just boils down to, you know, when rain falls, it's because you've reached quote unquote 100% humidity.
Right.
There is enough condensation that water is falling out of, you know, clouds. Mm-hmm. In this case, you've hit a point where humidity has hit, you know, 100%, and any additional moisture just is going to fall to the ground. And it's wild. It is wild to see and explain. And that's, you know, and that's the thing is, like, you know, part of me has been like, man, I grew up in, you know, Eastern Montana and I lived in Phoenix and I know that 90 is not terrible and 95 is not terrible,
but
when it's humid, it sucks because you can't sweat.
Right. It was 100% humidity, 96 degrees. And then at 7 o'clock, I was comfortable on the front porch in 90 degrees because the humidity had gone down.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me think, like, we're not even near the equator. You know, imagine going somewhere where it's like warmer, like warmer than it is here, because it's always going to be warmer on the equator than here. And that made me wonder, are people just radical because of the heat? Like in those areas, are their minds just like kind of warped in a way that people in cooler temperatures can't understand?
That's, I mean,
not in a bad way, but warped in a different way. Like, does the heat warp the mind like that?
I mean, we know it can. That's for sure. But you know, the difference. There's a couple of differences you have to keep in mind. Number one, physiology. Are you built for the heat? You know, being pale skins, the answer is usually not really.
Right. No.
You know, that's just one of those things. Like, you know, we don't do the heat very well. Right. And that's just, I mean, you think about it, you know, that's an adaptation. You know, we do better in colder climates, which is why, hey, white people, if you're afraid about the whole race thing, climate change is not your friend because it's getting hotter.
Right.
Now I'm just going to be an asshole about that because
it's true. That's great, because that's another one of my notes, Christian nationalism. But yes, that's the whole point of it's getting hotter at the equator. People are moving up because of it to cooler temperatures. You know what I mean? And that's gonna mix all of your communities.
Oh God. You know, and here's the reality is that, you know, there are ways for us to, you know, cool places, you know, at least create cooling centers. And there's, I would also say that there are ways for us to cool places as well. City of Phoenix was actually doing a study and showed that they could cool down the temperatures of the city by creating greenways, you know, essentially, you know, because they've got all of this, you know, asphalt now,
right?
It's become a major city, but by having these greenways where you have these major arterials get covered with tree cover, it actually helps cool down the neighborhood. Well, why does that happen? Well, number one, you don't have all of this asphalt absorbing heat, and then when it finally cools down, that asphalt releases that heat. It right. makes the nights stay warmer. I mean, this is something that is actually measurable. And so if you use tree cover to block sunlight hitting the asphalt, then guess what happens? You don't get the heat absorption. So you've got like actually quite a few studies where people are painting their roadways like as white as they can to keep them from absorbing heat. That's an interesting concept as well.
That is cool.
You know, because you've got, it's kind of like this weird juxtaposition, because you've got like the Dutch who are using roadway heat to generate electricity, but then you have places that are like in the desert where, you know, the cities are too hot, and if you don't figure out ways to keep from absorbing heat so it doesn't release later on and keep your nights warm, you know, you just kind of have this weird juxtaposition of, you know, how do you what kind of creative ways can you combat climate change?
It's amazing what the mind can think of when science is involved instead of religion, you know.
You know, but the thing is that, you know, up through the 50s, I would say 50s and maybe even the 60s, science and religion weren't really all that separated. It, you know, there was this idea that, you know, science was about, you know, explaining the how. You know, how does this thing do this? How does this function?
How did God create it?
And religion was the why, like the philosophical why are we here? What is our purpose?
Why did he create it? Yep.
And there was this fundamental understanding that, you know, we were never going to answer, quote unquote, what God's will was, but we could explain the inner workings of so many different things and how, you know, we got from point A to point B. I mean, if you think about it, the Catholic Church has accepted the theory of evolution since the 1950s. You know, the Catholic Church, of all places, that quote unquote man came from monkey. And, you know, and even then, you know, if you speak to people who, you know, read, you know, the Torah and, you know, the Old Testament, if that's what you're familiar with, you know, the earth being created in 7 days was a metaphor. It was a metaphor for how long it took for us to come into existence. It wasn't seven literal days.
Right.
You know, and I think that's one of the biggest problems when it comes to the whole, you know, argument of religion is that there are people out there who understand this, but they are drowned out by people who don't. Like, you know, Revelations was always one of my favorites. You know, being the horror buff that I am, this read like a fucking horror story. Then I started reading history and I went, this kind of looks familiar.
Right.
And it was Rome in the time of Nero.
Right. The Bible is a glorification of times. You know what I mean?
So,
but also that history repeats itself. The Bible fundamentally is based on the fact that history repeats itself, and every, like a clock, it's right every so often. You know what I mean?
Well, and the thing is that having grown up in a Christian household, in a Catholic household, there were plenty of lessons that I took with me when I left religion. And it's, you know, there's some things that I'm like, it's real cute that everybody believes it, but I'm sorry. There are certain things that go against the entirety of everything that we understand. It is not replicable in any sense of the imagination. And let's be real honest. This is, you know, the people who believe this are also the same people who believe everything they read on the internet as true as well. And it doesn't lend itself any credence. But when you look at some of the base actions, the base morals that are taught, you know, there's a lot that you can teach going forward. I mean, one of the biggest lessons that I learned that I took with me was to love everyone. You know, don't judge. You know why? Because let's be real honest, I got my own fucking battles going on, and judging somebody based on their own isn't exactly a great look. Now, right. am I somebody who gets it right all the time? No, I am not. But I, you know, when I get called out on it, I go, you know what? You're right. That was shitty. That was not cool of me to do, you know, and we'll just go from there. And, or, you know, the fact that, you know, everybody spends their entire, you know, existence reading the Bible and trying to define what is and isn't Christian. And for me, the definition is very simple. You know, when you look at the gospels that are written, you have to look at the actions that are explained, because you basically have what I would call the, you know, the gospels in a lot of ways are the opinion pieces, and the kernels of truth are in there, because you will see four people explain the same action four different ways, but the action itself is the same in every single one. So if you want to go with, because of our conversation, a conservative interpretation of the Bible,
just that you have to say that alone says there's an issue.
So if I were to go with a conservative interpretation, what I would say is that it's the action that you need to follow. You know, he fed the hungry, clothed the homeless, took care of those in need. He loved people regardless, and that's what you're actually supposed to do. Like, you know, you can sit down and you can define all of these different things as to whether they are or whether they aren't. You can jump back and forth between interpretations, and it's no different than what I would consider, you know, four media's take on, there's your numerology for the day. The four media's are like the four apostles.
There you go. Why not? It's a valid point, is that it was just reporting of the time after the fact.
And you have all of these different interpretations, but still one single solitary action.
Right.
So, and I approach the news much the same way. It's like, what is the actual thing that happened? Okay, let's drop the rest of the opinion bullshit, because that's fucking useless to me. I don't give a shit about somebody else's opinion most of the time.
Right.
You know, it's like, If there's an interesting take on something, yeah, sure, I'll take a listen to it and see what their explanation is for it. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it's just people selling outrage and trying to scare people and this, that, and the other, and it's just boring to me. I just don't do it.
I get it. I listen to what you're saying, the action, the fact, the story, and then I dip out, and I come up with my own thoughts on it, and then I go back, and then I'm like, well, they missed it. Like, they're off, and then I leave. You know what I mean? Because nobody hits it from my perspective. So
that was like, you know, when you had the whole Russian collusion thing with Trump. Mm-hmm. The first thing I said was, you're never going to find collusion. What you're going to find are a bunch of selfish assholes, because the problem with Trump is that you can't have this criminal mastermind genius and this blabbering booger-eating moron exist in the same body. That's not how this works. Either he's an idiot who thinks he's got the best people, or he is actually a criminal genius. And as we came to find out over the course of his presidency, he's a moron. And he's a moron that got elected to the highest office of the land because he somehow rolled high enough charisma to get people to believe his bullshit. You know, is the only way that I know how to speak it. And unfortunately for a lot of authoritarians,
he has great survival skills. Once he's in a situation, he will scammer like a fucking possum in a garbage can to get out of it. And he won't quit until he does get out of it. And a lot of times he's making a bigger mess behind him and people are like, oh, look at the mess instead of the possum. That's how he did it. But eventually he's going to get tired, slow down and get caught.
And that's the reality. And what you ended up seeing was a bunch of people that had surrounded Trump trying to get their fame, trying to get their moment of glory,
right, their agenda. Right.
And you had some people that were seeking, you know, the fame, the fortune and the camera time. And you had other people that were seeking, you know, more underground means and more, you know, back alley means, and people got caught. You know, one of the things from the last January 6th hearing that I watched, you know, the last one that aired, is you have all of these people that are sitting there that go on their media platforms going, how can they attack our president? And how can they do this? And how can they say that? But when you read the actual text messages that they were sending,
right,
they were fucking scared. They were scared of what was going to happen, not necessarily to the fucking movement, but to them, because right, they had backed this guy.
That's right. They were talking about legal ramifications. They were,
you know, and that's there. How, and so what I want people to take away, it's, I don't want people to think that it was only the conservatives that were fucking cowards in this, because I guarantee you the Democrats are no different in how they've gone with Biden. The craziest part in all of this is that the insurrectionist president has higher ratings than the fucking current one because he's fucked it up so bad.
I'm going to call that to be determined at the moment.
Trump's ratings were never lower.
I'm just going to say that Biden's might be going up soon.
Maybe.
I don't know, because I think what he, like I said last week, what he's been trying to do is force Congress to do something. And I think it started to work this week. I honestly do. I think like Joe Manchin just came to terms with, I've taken everything that the Democrats had, all the momentum, and used it for myself. I don't know what happened with him. I'm not going to take personal credit, but it just seems like the accomplishments that are going on and the way things are going to start calming down, I really think is going to favor Biden.
And unfortunately, I don't see that happening. With inflation running out of control, what I see is very much a Jimmy Carter situation.
I'm not saying I like Joe Biden. I'm just saying that I don't like the other side. And I think the messaging is getting better. I think Democrats are getting better on their talking points. The 1-6 commission, I think everything is starting to go the Democrats' way. And I don't know what's going to happen with that. Democrats are up overall over Republicans almost 6 points across the board. And that's weird. I don't think that's enough, but I think it's a weird phenomenon that we're not looking at.
I don't trust the polls because it has gotten it so wrong. What I see is very much a repeat of history. I see what was Nixon and what was Carter. And if I had to put my money on it, I would say that most likely you're going to have DeSantis be the quote unquote next Reagan.
As much as I hate that. I doubt it. I mean,
unless the Democrats and Biden, to me, that's
laughable.
The idea of Trump being president was laughable to us, too. And look what fucking happened.
Yeah.
People have to learn how to steel themselves for the worst case scenario. People didn't vote for the worst case scenario. People voted because they didn't think the worst case scenario was possible.
People voted.
I got you cornered on that one.
No, I'm just trying to formulate my thought here. People didn't vote for Donald Trump for change. They voted for him because it seemed to outrage the media so much that he was gaining popularity. And the more the more popularity he got, the more the liberal media was like, oh God, no, we can't have this. He's the demon. And everybody was like, look at this. Look what we're doing. This is fucking the libs really hard. And it's been going that way. Every outrage, everything Republicans do that are outrageous, outrages the libs, which is exactly what the Republicans want. And Ron DeSantis coming up, outraging us after Donald Trump did. I think once people get to know him, they're going to be like, oh no, he's not our guy. But let him try. I'm okay with that. But I think liberals in the media have to stop paying attention and looking for the next demon. It's not Joe Rogan. Right? Nope. It's not Elon Musk. It's not Donald Trump. It's not Ron DeSantis. It's not Joe Biden either, or Nancy Pelosi, by the way.
Right.
But
right.
It's closer to Mitch McConnell. I think we focused in on everything is saying we could work if this one gear was moving better. And I think the pressure of that is causing Mitch to make moves that are making things happen by force. And I think all of that in the end is going to favor the Democrats.
As much as I would like to believe that, the problem is that Democrats have acted too slowly on a number of things.
Yeah.
They have, messaging has been awful.
It's been awful.
Inflation, it's been awful. The fact that it took them as long as they did to start addressing inflation, like, uh-huh. Don't get me wrong, like I don't think that doing aggressively what we're doing now back right. in the early days would have been a good idea. I think it would have tanked the economy.
You know, somebody said something really smart, and it'll fit your narrative. Well, not narrative, the actual thing that happened is somebody said we had shitty supply chains because of COVID, and then instead of fixing the supply chains, we just gave a bunch of money to people, and so they started buying things and the supply chains couldn't handle it because of COVID. And I was like, God damn it, that makes mm-hmm. sense. That makes sense. And all of that money mm-hmm. money just fucked us up.
Well, so this is where I do think that you have this issue of target. Everybody, almost, you know, everybody got money in a lot of ways. Almost everybody did. Mm-hmm. Now, am I grateful for the money that I got? Absolutely. Am I grateful for the money that I got? You know, I used it to get rid of my credit card debt. You know, I did. I of course, I have bought some things as well, but they were mostly durable goods, things that were going to last a long time. Oh. And then I was listening to a great economic report on this as well. The thing is that there's now, you know, an overstock of durable goods because of the fact that people spent their money early on in the pandemic. And now with inflation getting out of control, they're tamping down to their needs. And so you're going to see, I would argue that probably this summer, early fall, you're going to start seeing some really fucking good deals on some things that you just would not believe.
Yeah.
Like I'm probably going to be able to score a really nice 55 inch 4K TV for my room and I'm probably going to get it at a screaming deal.
Yeah. Cause here comes Black Friday and Christmas, right?
Not even that. It's because people bought all of that stuff uh-huh. with their relief funds.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the slowdown is going to happen right at the time for them to have the breaking sales. You know, it was just shitty that I just realized all of that stimulus went to shit that needed to be shipped here. Doesn't that mean that we paid somebody somewhere else? Doesn't that mean all of that stimulus money we got went to China to deliver stuff here?
Yes and no.
Yes.
And yeah. I mean, some of it did, some of it didn't. Americans overwhelmingly paid down debt with their stimulus money.
Yeah.
But they did buy a few things with it as well.
Yeah. Rent? Like, that's what I paid.
Yeah. Rent. Yeah. I mean, rent, food, but overwhelmingly, like besides rent, you know, besides like your immediate needs, the things that people spent their money on was getting rid of their debts, their credit card debts.
Well, that's what they're surviving on now, is that lack of.
But thanks to inflation, credit card debt has actually started to go back up again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because people have always been using their credit, not their bank accounts.
Well, I mean, there's a benefit to using, you know, your credit if you have the means to do it.
That's right.
And unfortunately, when you're already living paycheck to paycheck, for most people, that's just not a reality.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, and unfortunately, like for me, it's like I've had this great run of not having to use a credit or using my credit card and then just paying it off right away. Mm-hmm. It's been fantastic. I've enjoyed it. But what's going to happen now is that when my student loans pick up again in September, you know, the credit card is not going to get used at all. You know, it's going to be, if I don't have the cash for it, I'm not going to buy it.
Right.
Because quite frankly, it's like, interest rates have gone up significantly. So why would I want to pay more for something when I can just save my money, drop cash on it, and not have to pay somebody else for the luxury of owning a piece of plastic and a revolving credit line?
Right. Okay. Well, I'll say Joe Biden might not be fixing it fast enough or well, but it was broken. Somebody came in and broke it.
Still broken.
All I want to say is, like, I don't support Joe Biden to run again. I also don't support Donald Trump running again. If Ron DeSantis wants to try in the field that is different, homogenous versions of Ron DeSantis, then that's fine. If Ted Cruz and, you know, Mitt Romney and Ron DeSantis want to stand on a stage and look diversified, then they can go ahead and try and do that. You know what right. I mean? That's fine. Then I hope a Cory Booker actually has a chance, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, and here's what's been absolutely crazy is that, you know, there was some, I forget which company it was, released an article about who Americans want to see run instead of Joe Biden. And their number one pick was fucking Hillary Clinton. I said, no, it's not. I guarantee you, if you want to see the Republicans win the next election, go ahead, throw Hillary Clinton up there.
I just, from a different point of view, from a policy wonk point of view, if you want like things to get organized, then you need a Hillary Clinton and an Elizabeth Warren ticket for 4 years. You just do. And after that, anybody can do whatever they want. The guardrails will be in place. You know what I mean?
Guarantee that, you
that's Hillary, the good side of Hillary. Hillary can dig into a policy like nobody can, you know. It's
Hillary can
people
dig into
worry
a policy,
about her agenda, yeah. And I worry about her personal agenda. But as far as reading a policy, yeah, I like her. I wouldn't vote for her for president.
Exactly, no. But that's exactly the point.
But the funny thing is like Republican mm-hmm. polls say Trump is getting about 33%, but 40% want somebody else. Like, it doesn't even determine who. It's Trump or somebody else, because there's nobody there that can fill the void. Like mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis, it's the attention he gets is because the liberal media cries about him. Like, mm-hmm. look at how radical he is. The same with Greg Abbott in Texas. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be your presidential primary? Go for it. You know what I mean? Like, so Ron DeSantis thinks that he is great because he has 1,000 people around him telling him he's great. But once he walks out and has to talk to like the other millions that can't stand him, he's gonna shrink. And I guarantee it, and I'm gonna love watching it. Nobody's Trump. They all think they're Trump, but they can't handle the burn like he could. He could handle that fire behind him the whole way in a way I've never seen anybody else do, you know?
Just seriously. No, it's definitely going to be interesting just simply because, you know, mm-hmm. it's always early. Everybody has their ideas. Everybody's trying to feel things out while not blowing up the midterms.
Right.
I mean, realistically speaking, I don't know that anybody is, you know, I don't know who's going to make it out and who's going to decide, nah, fuck this, I'm not going for it.
Could be a Fetterman and from Philadelphia if he wins, or Pennsylvania if he wins.
But
the way
I hear
he's running his campaign against Dr. Oz is kind of cute and adorably brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's the Doug Mastriano, who's the Christian nationalist. I don't know if you pay attention mm-hmm. to that. And I just think these guys like J.D. Vance in Ohio, and Matt Gaetz, they all have these shocking opinions of the way we should live. Like, somebody in an abusive relationship should stay in an abusive relationship, says J.D. Vance. Like, that's that's not normal. Like, that's not normal. That's a radical view. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to vote for him. I mean, you can put up all the ads you want. It's just you're worse than the Democrat. It's you're sinking lower than the Democrat when you could just shut your fucking mouth, like I told Marco Rubio, and you would be better than the Democrat. A Republican that doesn't say anything but just does his job is always going to be better than the person that's yelling. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just, and that's what Marco Rubio's doing, by the way. Like, he's working on the burn pit legislation and in a meaningful ways. And I like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I told Matt Gaetz too. Just shut your mouth and vote for something, you know?
Right.
And what did Matt Gaetz said? Why is it all the ugly women that aren't going to get pregnant are complaining about pro-life? Oh my God, Matt, you know? And he's going to get reelected because he has no competition. Because he's going to shut his mouth after that.
Well, unless they actually decide to, you know, indict him on sex trafficking.
Well, he's going to get indicted. That's for sure. He's going to go to jail, but he's going to be replaced by, I don't know, the governor, right? I don't know what would happen after that. So,
yeah, the governor will pick his replacement.
And that would be Nikki Fried, by the way. Florida, Nikki Fried, F-R-I-E-D. Is awesome. She wants to legalize weed. She wants to expand Medicaid. She wants to take care of the people. She doesn't want to just work in the, she's our agriculture commissioner. She's the only, she's the highest ranking Democrat to win statewide in Florida, our agriculture commissioner. She's awesome. Check her out.
Nice.
I keep inviting her on the show, and then I come to realize it's more important that she goes on bigger shows than gets more attention here in Florida, like Florida-based shows, and then I'll just promote her because she's cool. Somebody said Oprah Winfrey should run for governor. I was like, fuck you. Like, Nikki Fried has policies that I agree with. I don't know what I agree with Oprah Winfrey on, but I don't know her policies at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Why, we got to stop voting for popularity and start voting for people we agree with.
Well, that's where we're at, though, is that yeah. It's not about voting for policy anymore. It's about voting for,
mm-hmm.
about voting for, you know, who you like that's going to upset the other party the most.
Right. But it's this interesting thing. We can always just follow the person that we're thinking about on Twitter or Facebook and see what they write. You know what I mean? Just, you have a whole year to pay attention to them. That's what's mm-hmm. so cool about it. So do you know anything about the, wait, where should I start? Podcasting. God, we did that. So do you know anything about the CHIPS Act?
CHIPS. A little bit. Yep. Da-da-da.
I was just watching the guy that runs the company in Taiwan that makes the semiconductors for all of the planet, you know, and he's like explaining that he could only be this innovative because Taiwan has had 50 years of both peace and education, and they've increased their GDP, or not their GDP, what is it? They've increased something 5% every decade. So maybe it is their GDP.
Yeah, their GDP.
Their like quality of life has gone up 5%.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool. And I wanted to say that peace and prosperity go together. And education is part of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. But the CHIPS Act is corporate welfare. Wait, it's bringing production home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So which is it?
Yes, it's both.
Okay. Are we paying them to bring their stuff back here?
In a way, yes. And in a way, no. So basically, you're at the point of when it comes to making microchips, mm-hmm. Microprocessors, the technology has changed in such ways that, you know, anything that you bring is going to have to be able to adapt to how things keep changing. So a lot of it is going to be, you know, building new factories in places where you're going to be able to get the workers necessary in order to build these chips, where right. you're going to have places where you're going to be able to attract workers to come, places that are going to, you know, fit the needs. One of the biggest problems, you know, the thing about globalization, and as much as I enjoy globalization, there's always a risk of relying on somebody else to fulfill your own needs.
Right.
And so, thanks to the previous administration, thanks to COVID, thanks to wars, thanks to dick measuring contests, what we found out is that there were some very key and critical things that we as a country need, and we can't get access to them because, well, politics kind of tends to fuck up trade relationships.
Yeah.
So, what does the CHIPS Act do? The CHIPS Act helps subsidize building factories. It helps subsidize getting things started, getting things up and running. And what it does on top of that is, because so much of the stuff that we need and we use is run off of computers, it gets us a steady supply of chips. Now, there's also a national security component to this. So a lot of these chips, you know, the biggest concern is there a backdoor for foreign actors to be able to monitor what it is that we're doing?
Right.
And this is one of those places where having tight control over your own supply chain for certain critical components makes the most sense.
That was the issue with the Huawei, right? The 5G?
Huawei, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Because their technology, while, you know, the price point was right, the problem was is that there were backdoors created because Huawei is, you know, a communist China country's company.
Right.
And so what the government asks for is what's going to happen. Now, the thing is that I'm not going to say that Trump was wrong on this, you know, because he raised this point very vocally. And a bunch of people, you know, tried to, you know, play it off as racism. A bunch of people tried to play it off as, you know, him not understanding. I don't think he understands it, but I do think that the right people were in his ear going, look, this is actually kind of a security problem.
Sure. There was good people in the Trump administration trying to do good things, as well as people that were just trying to benefit themselves. It wasn't like all Republicans are bad. That Cassidy Hutchinson rocks, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'd have her in my administration. So that's right. Cool. That's cool.
So knowing that right now with the state of geopolitics, where they're at, you know, we're not going to be getting reliable chips from China. Taiwan is on an interesting cusp. And if you don't hedge your bets now, let's say China does attack Taiwan, suddenly we lose our access to whatever chips that we were getting.
And those Taiwan chips are in every iPhone, every iPad, every desktop computer, every laptop. They're in your refrigerators. They're everywhere. They are the lifeblood of our technology today. And China could just take that island. That's why it's important to defend it. But we also don't want to go to war for China. So we'd rather start manufacturing them here. But we need people that, like you said, are educated in doing that, right? And that was my point about pulling people out of coal mines to learn and be educated in the jobs that we need, you know? Mm-hmm. Yes, 18-year-old dudes can go and work in a coal mine, you know, but at some point, can we phase them out and teach them to do something else so they don't get black lung? Like, you know, can they make the money and then also be trained to move on so we have a rotation of promotion in tiers? I'm okay with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I like the idea. And I like hearing about there's going to be another vote on Xi Jinping. Like, I don't know his name.
Xi Jinping.
Right. Like a confidence vote or something in another term or something. And like, mm-hmm. COVID is fucking him up, and this Taiwan thing and this Russia thing, and everything is just destabilizing. There's protests now in China, and it's mm-hmm. like, it's like perfect timing. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I would, and here's the thing is that, you know, what I would say is that where China has excelled in the past is when they haven't had as hard line of leaders.
Right.
And, you know, it fostered better relationships. Now, here's the thing is that there's always been tension over Taiwan between China and the U.S.
And we both agreed that we're not going to, like, go for it.
Well, you know, that's what it used to be, you know,
right.
She has absolutely decided that that's maybe not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bunch of, you know, there was a bunch of question as to whether or not, you know, he should, you know, get another term, like whether or not he could, you know, rule the country indefinitely, right. much like Russia is doing. Now, I think one of the things that China learned from the Soviet Union was that leadership of the Communist Party seems to do better when there is change. You know, because you had Mao lead for a long time. And then they started rotating in leaders, and that seemed to help create more prosperity for China.
Right. More outreach, right? They weren't just an isolated nation anymore.
Right.
Right.
Right. And so you saw China really come into its own under a lot of these other leaders that, you know, while we still had our vocal disagreements on things, the hard line wasn't there. Right. And it really made things a lot easier for us to do business with China. Since the time of Xi's rule, it has become increasingly harder for us to do business with China because of their take it or leave it policies. I would also include us in this, but the lack of willing to negotiate, the lack of willingness to really find, you know, a calm center ground that doesn't involve, you know, threats of taking over islands that, you know, are friendly to us.
Can't look past the human rights. You just taking over Hong Kong, the Uyghurs, the news, all of that stuff, and then China just fighting in public with our sports figures and stuff. The way they could reach down and attack people was just disturbing.
So and then on top of that, you know, much like Trump, COVID really sucked up Xi's political capital.
Yeah,
because prior to COVID, you know, he was actually doing pretty decently well. But because of the lack of willingness to really innovate in terms of how to deal with the pandemic, you know, their zero COVID policy has actually come back to bite them very significantly.
Right.
And
the further crackdown, because they didn't have immunization from these later variants because of the way they isolated. Yeah. So now these things are hitting them much harder than they're hitting us. So,
right. And, you know, the thing was, is that rather than looking at their vaccine and going, you know what, no, this isn't effective, we either need to bring in vaccine or we need to create a better version.
Right.
They stuck to their guns with it, and that was really not the best solution. And so they stuck to a vaccine that barely did anything and a method of COVID control that has harmed their economy in a way that, you know, now you're starting to see issues around being able to repay mortgages in the country and rents and things like that. You know, his policies have absolutely done a number on the country.
They're freezing accounts so that people can't withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
Like real people can't withdraw. So there's issues there. And so it's amazing. Like by the time Trump loses, and for 2025, we could lose Xi. We could Russia could peter out. He could be like overthrown. Mm-hmm. This could be a real weird world if we just keep pushing forward and having that vision, you know. But the thing is, Saudi Arabia, right? They're gross.
China's not going to go anywhere. You will. I would hedge a bet.
I just want them to be a different more ruler. Moderate. Yeah, a different ruler is fine. You know, like I would prefer somebody more moderate, somebody that wants to work within the global community for a better global community, not a one China, not a one America, not a one Russia.
You will never see one. You will never see one China go away. That will never happen. Okay. That is, I think, really unfortunate.
That's threats of imperialism, right?
Right. Exactly. And honestly, like if China wanted to see the U.S. really back away from something like this, you know, they would drop the claims to, if they drop the claims to Taiwan, I guarantee you that, you know, what it would look like is, you know, Taiwan would probably ask us, you know, to establish a base, but we would say no.
Right.
Simply because it's like, look, you know, if you're no longer under threat of invasion by China, we'll sell you military hardware like we're doing now. We'll help train you. Don't get me wrong. But, right. you know, if this idea of taking Taiwan comes off the table, America would have no need to build a military base there. We've already got Japan. We've already got South Korea. That right. would not having another military base there would not be necessarily within our best interests. It would actually make things worse.
Yeah, we don't want to plant a flag in disputed territory. We want to
look. Well, even if it's not disputed anymore, it puts us closer, you know, to a risk yeah, that we would go. There's no reason for us to take that risk.
That's like putting nukes in Cuba. You know what I mean? It would be too close.
It would be like us showing up with nukes in Ukraine. It would not be a great right. decision. It would be a really bad decision. I'm not saying that, you know, the tough part is I'm not like saying that our current decision making with how we're addressing Ukraine is adequate, but I would also say that it keeps us from devolving to a point where we're hoping that rational minds you know, don't launch a fucking nuke.
Right. Our better angels. I had that thought and it just, I don't know how I got away from it. Something about the sports. Brittany Griner, right? She's in she's in Russia. Now,
yep.
Somebody raised an interesting point about this that I didn't address it because it's a basic forward conversation to have. But what was interesting to me is she was there because maybe if she had made as much money as her male counterpart, she wouldn't have had to go and work in Russia for money. Mm-hmm. And I found that interesting, that maybe because of her lack of pay and equality, that caused her to go somewhere. Is she wrongfully detained? She had marijuana in a country that doesn't allow marijuana, right?
All right. Let's have some fun with this one because this is a fun one. For starters, I struggle to believe that she actually had hash cartridges on her to begin with.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Because she's been playing in Russia since 2014.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. Like 2014, 2015, somewhere in there.
Right. So she'd been there, she'd done that.
This wasn't her first trip to Russia. Now, she does have a medical card for marijuana.
Right.
So there is the possibility that, you know, she had a couple of cartridges on her when she packed her stuff. Like it's a, what people have to understand is that Russia's policy on drugs is that no, absolutely not.
Zero.
It's you're gambling with your fucking life. And that's just like with dealing with weed. So here is one of the biggest problems that we're up against, that the U.S. you know, the U.S. women's national team came up against, and you know, with the men's national team, where you have the WNBA and you have the NBA.
Right.
So I'm going to start with a basic question. And that basic question is, if you have two retail stores, one is larger, sells more merchandise, sells more ability to get what you need, and you have then a mom and pop store whose sales aren't nearly as big.
Oh, that's gross.
Who do you expect to be able to pay more?
Well, of course, the bigger one.
And that's where there is no difference in this scenario between that and, you know, the NBA versus the WNBA. You don't have the same star buying power because you don't have the same level of merchandise sales.
Huh.
You don't have the same level of ticket sales. Tickets to go to an NBA, like, you know, let's do a little math. Let's find out what the tickets to go to a Phoenix game is.
The inequality is systemic. That's what I'm saying. They didn't both have the same jumping off points.
This is where they didn't have the same jumping off point, but this is economics 101, supply and demand.
Oh, of course, as it is now.
The demand is to go see an NBA game, not a WNBA game. Now, that demand has changed a lot since I was younger when the WNBA first came into being.
Oh, for sure. I'm watching WNBA.
So let's see.
I would much rather watch the women. They're awesome. You know what I mean?
Let's see here.
It's
so,
not, but it's also not as commercialized. So that's the other side of it.
So, I mean, for nosebleed tickets, it's $61 to go to a Phoenix Suns game. Let's say. Now let's look at a Phoenix Mercury ticket.
Let's do it. Who's the Phoenix Mercury?
It's the WNBA.
I know. It's just.
Let's see. What do they have?
For nosebleeds?
Let's say Phoenix Mercury at. Let's see. What is the cost of a ticket to go to a. $45.
Okay. That's not bad.
But those are actually much better seats.
Oh.
So.
Apples and oranges.
Nosebleed, you know, but I'm looking at your cheapest tickets. Nosebleed seats for a Phoenix game.
Gotcha.
Is $61.
Mm-hmm.
Decent seats for a Mercury game, $45. So let's start there. Because you could extrapolate that, and decent seats for a Phoenix Suns game are probably gonna run you $100 to $125.
Mm. So twice, we'll go three times the price. How about that?
Potentially, yeah. So,
three times the popularity, three times the revenue draw, three times. Okay.
And on top of that, you know, these places are also selling tons of merchandise. They have more butts and seats. Mm. Like, it's unfortunate. But the thing is that you have to remember that these are private organizations. They're not, you know, it's not like the city of Phoenix owns them. And so they can set the price as, you know, the price for this seat is, you know, $45. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you're going to a men's game or a women's game. Now, where there's a stark difference between, let's say, the men's national team and the women's national team is that this comes around once every 4 years in their case. You know, the difference is that, you know, you don't have this constant draw on, you know, seating like you would for, you know, an NBA game or a WNBA game. So you actually end up with a lot more equality in the national soccer teams,
right,
than you do with, you know, individual private
mm-hmm.
basketball teams.
I get what you're saying.
So, and on top of that, the women's national team, they're a fucking powerhouse. They sell a lot of jerseys. They're selling more butts than seats. Why? Because they fucking win championships.
That's true. They win
World Cups, you know, Women's World Cup. And so it's, you know, you're starting to at least see more equal footing. Now, whether or not, you know, whether or not this same issue exists, you know, for, you know, women's soccer versus men's soccer, I mean, probably does. But soccer, at least in this country, doesn't have the same popularity as football or basketball or baseball.
That's true. I just think women's basketball, if they, and they can now, it's all in advertising and marketing, and there was just barriers there for women for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think those are gone. And I think that's why it's beginning to gain popularity. And so, I just think we need to promote that just as much. Like, if you promoted basketball less than men's basketball less, eventually women's basketball would be better.
It's all about market. And, you know, for the longest time, you could make the argument that men's basketball was more entertaining than women's basketball. And it's not even to women. Like, I know plenty of women who don't like watching women's basketball because they don't think it's as fast-paced or as exciting as men's basketball.
Interesting.
And that was actually really curious to me because
they should start watching it again.
That was literally my question. I'm like, but you know, at least, like, you know, doesn't there feel like there should be a little bit more of a relation? Like, once upon a time I played basketball and this could have been me in this league. Now, and that's the ebb and flow of every, you know, professional team, every professional, you know, sport is that there comes a time where, you know, the sport itself becomes stagnant. And, you know, there was a lot of initial excitement in WNBA that kind of waned when, you know, people started to realize you weren't going to be watching, you know, massive dunks like you saw in the NBA at the time.
Oh, okay. But the NBA wasn't always massive dunks, you know what I mean?
But it, I mean, it was a pretty Wild West moment there for a while, like especially yeah. like in the early 2000s, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, like you had everything from Michael Jordan and the Bulls to Ron Artest ending up, you know, having a fucking fight with the fans.
But Larry Bird wasn't alley-ooping is what I've seen. No, saying, you know what I mean?
No. And when you look at like basketball back in the, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, right. 80s, it was, you know, it wasn't that exciting, but there was a moment where basketball was actually really fucking exciting.
Yes. And I'm going to say that women's basketball is on the verge of having that moment.
And that's the thing is like, I don't disagree with that assessment either. Right. Do I think it will be as big as the NBA? I don't know. And the reason I say I don't know is because that there's going to come a point where that marketing, they're going to figure out what their sweet spot is in marketing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There are going to be more eyeballs that end up watching it. And I do think that, you know, they're going to move on to bigger venues, to more fans. Sadly, I think that in a lot of ways, what is happening with Brittany Griner is actually going to drive more eyeballs to the WNBA.
Yeah.
I really do think that that's actually going to happen.
How about this? Thanks for listening to Public Access America. We're going to continue on what he was just thinking because I was going to bring that up. So thank you for listening. We'll be right back with this further discussion. We're not done with Brittany yet.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and kick you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I, poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Apple
Podcasts, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making. Making history in the making.